when you build an environment where people can really truly be who they are, what you're essentially doing is inviting authenticity into the room. You're inviting a high trust component into the room. You're also inviting, you know, a chance for people to really connect.
Welcome to the Leadership Junkies podcast, brought to you by Cartavera, the leadership development ecosystem that helps you grow your people, grow your business, and grow your life. We have a special guest today. Kong Shong is with us. This is episode 119, and it's titled Walking the Talk, Strategies for Building a Diverse and People-First Culture. Of course, it is the topic of the day, diversity, equity, inclusion. Kong has many years of experience with working with senior leaders and teams to help get that right, to build those cultures of diversity, equity, inclusion. He also is here to talk about leadership, talking about empathy and vulnerability, especially around the DEI topic. This is going to be a rich and juicy conversation of the many ways that you and your team members can learn to lead differently, create that psychological safety that the teams are craving, and ultimately have the team engagement that you desire. Welcome to the Leadership Junkies podcast, where we explore leadership, business, and personal growth to help you grow your business and live a richer life. We're your hosts, Jeff Dischwitz
and Craig Matthews. We believe that leaders have to put their people first. And if you don't have time to grow your people, then you're not leading.
Get ready for conversations that will challenge your thinking and help you transform your leadership and your business.
Welcome to your bigger business and bigger life.
We are so excited to be back. And I had a chance to talk to our guest today, Kong Shong, who we chatted just a week or two ago, had a great conversation, and I knew within the first 5 minutes, this is somebody we want on the podcast. He's bringing over 10 years of experience in leadership development, management consulting, and he has worked for some of literally the world's top leadership development companies. So he's seen what works. He's seen what doesn't work. He's got an expertise in so many areas, including diversity, equity, inclusion, employee engagement, strategy execution, culture transformation, organizational effectiveness. Wow. You're going to hear right away, Kong brings a lot of wisdom to this topic. And you're no surprise here, there's certainly going to be a river of people first flowing through this conversation.
For sure.
Welcome, Kong.
Thank you so much, Jeff and Craig. Appreciate both your time and appreciate me being here, spending this wonderful day with both of you.
Yeah, great to have you.
So, Kong, give us a little bit of your backstory.
Yeah, so aside from what you've read, my love for people really stemmed from when I was back in high school at 14 years old, volunteering in the community, really giving back to people in need, and really seeing the struggles and finding ways to really solve the problems. And that volunteer work led me to major in psychology, where I really wanted to understand human behavior and how that shapes people, their mindset, and find ways that, I can leverage their abilities to help improve communities. And so it's been a journey having to be in the human resources space, touch in various aspects of leadership development, as you said, diversity, equity, inclusion, which is really about people, putting people first. What I've realized is that when you put people first, you build a culture where, the business thrive. It leads to innovation, it leads to revenue increase, and employees are more engaged and happier. And so it's been a phenomenal journey. I couldn't be happier being anywhere else.
Cool. So Kong, let's jump right into the issue. Let's talk about the gap. Where do you see the gap between intention and execution when it comes to people and organizations?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I think intention is really about where do you see yourself the next 5, 10 years? Like, what is that, you know, what is that purpose? Why are you doing it? And then, you know, the strategy is, how do you get leaders to think about plan in the next 5 to 10 years, how to get there? So it's really about the why and the how. So when you have the why figure out, the how is a bit easier to figure out. And so what I've seen with business leaders is that they may have the right intentions, but the strategy is wrong. Maybe they don't have the right people in place, or they don't have the appropriate tools necessary, the ability to think strategically, or even adapt to the ever-changing dynamic of the business and the market.
So let me drill a little deeper on that intention question. What I often see is you've got leaders who really are committed. I'll say not just intending, but they're committed to get doing right with their people. Mm. And as you said, they don't have the strategy right. They don't have the how right. And then there's also leaders who say they have that intention, but frankly, they think they're already there. There's a huge blind spot. Mm-hmm. So what have you seen that will help, you know, help leaders identify this blind spot and ultimately help them get past the blind spot to actually lead the way they believe they are leading?
Yeah, two things. First is the leader has to have self-awareness. And the second is that they have to be surrounded by the right people. Now, my first point is so crucial because when you demonstrate self-awareness, you're really using feedback from people and reflection you gain along the way to improve on yourself and the business. And when you're surrounded by the best people in the business, they help you become better.
And for sure.
Yes, and these people, your team, so you have to empower them, inspire them, and ensure that you care for them and that you empathize with them in order to ensure that they are doing the best work that they can to help you get to where you need to be.
Yeah, so good. So when you look at that, the aspect of actually caring about the people is one piece, and mm-hmm. then you're really talking about taking care of them so that they can perform at their best. So what are some of the ways that you see that people are doing that effectively?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, reflecting on my time at some of the companies I've worked at, I'd say that an effective leader is someone who creates a psychological, there's this concept of psychological safety, right? They create an environment where people can feel safe to be who they are. They can bring their authentic self to work, and knowing that they wouldn't be judged or be penalized for the things they do or say. It's really building a culture or environment where people can trust that what they're saying will not hinder their job or their performance.
Gotcha.
And create an environment where people can feel free to make mistakes and learn from it and be creative. That's where the juice is at. That's where the excitement is at.
Well, that's where the innovation is going to come from too, because if you're not afraid of putting out your crazy idea, then let it shine.
Exactly. And, you know, I've worked for, you know, throughout my career, I've had good and bad managers, right? Like everyone.
Sure.
Has. And, you know, I worked for a manager that just wouldn't allow us to speak during meetings. I mean, she created an environment that was, it was about her, and she dictated the conversation in the direction of our conversations, and always in a rush. And so it didn't really allow the team to flourish by, you know, contributing their ideas and be creative and be more of who they are. And, you know, of course, you can guess how long I was there for.
people leave their managers.
Right. And so, you know, what I often say to myself is when you have a, you know, when you work for a bad manager, don't be that manager. Be,
yeah,
be that manager that you wish someone was for you.
Yeah, and that's not your role model.
Exactly, exactly. Be the role model for other people. You know, pave the way for other people. And that's been my model.
So one of the things that you talked about there was really self-awareness. And Jeff is a coach. He deals with that often with a lot of people in helping them find their blind spots. But you also talked about taking the feedback, and oftentimes people don't get that much feedback. How does somebody know if they're really self-aware?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, for someone who may be afraid to ask for feedback, because we all, you know, there are times, you know, I'm guilty of this, you know, where I don't want to ask for feedback because I don't want, you know, the honesty.
Right? Yeah.
But you have to have, you have to build enough courage to ask, because that is the, one of the few ways that you can improve. And so I remember when early in my career, when I was afraid of asking feedback from my colleagues, I started with my family members. And that's a great way to, you know, build that courage is, you know, ask people, you know, your close friends, your family members, you know, what do they think of you just in general, just the question itself. And as you get more comfortable learning, get more comfortable hearing what other people think about you, it becomes easier. And that translates to, you know, I mean, the personal experiences translates to the professional experiences. So starting with your friends and family, and then it goes on to your colleagues and then your manager. And so, and think of feedback as is a positive thing. It's a way to improve on yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be hard to hear, but at the same time, you have to also realize that people who care for you are the ones that give you feedback. If they don't care, they would not spend, you know, 5 seconds, you know,
right,
giving you feedback. So it's something to appreciate.
Let's Kong, let's talk about one of those elements a little more. You talked about an environment that's safe to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and we found with so many people we talked to, there's such a blind spot there, because positional leaders, every single one I've ever met, read about, listened to, all said they learn from their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's vital. Yet their cultures rarely create that safety for mistakes. So there's a huge disconnect there. And so I call that a massive blind spot. How did you see that show up? And what were some of the ways that people and organizations were able to get past that to actually create that culture where, yeah, we'll make mistakes. Let's learn from them though.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think it really starts from the top and trickles down, right? Leaders have to be the role models. Leaders, they have to make mistakes and show to the employees that it's okay. I make mistakes. We're all humans, and you know it's you know we'll get through this. So when a leader demonstrates this behavior to employees and they see that, you know, it gives employees a chance to follow suit.
And the vulnerability. I'm sorry.
And so, you know, too often we have, you know, I've been in spaces where leaders, you know, they don't walk the talk, right?
Yeah, so to speak. Totally.
They say something, but they act differently, right? For example, in the issue of diversity, equity, inclusion, a lot of companies are stepping up saying, you know, we believe in diversity, equity, inclusion. We, you know, they put out a public statement out there, but then internally, nothing gets done. They haven't put enough budget to this division to hire a head of diversity, equity, inclusion to help them navigate through these sometimes difficult conversations, or provide budget to create employee resource groups. And so it's important that if you're going to build trust as an effective leader, you have to essentially walk the talk, ensure that you are putting actions to where your mouth is.
That is a fascinating topic, the DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. And might as well get into that here. I'm actually fascinated because I'm watching a show now called Billions. And one of the things that's fascinating about it, and it's the first time in the history of television or shows, they have a main character who is non-binary. And that's how they are in their life. They are non-binary. They don't claim male or female, and they've got their pronouns, the they, their, them pronouns. It's fascinating to watch. And as I've shared this with some friends, a lot of them have given a response that I see leaders make, which is, gosh, it's so confusing. Why do they have to be that? And so how, you know, where do you see that mindset show up? And how do you help leaders get past that? Because it's a very, to me, a selfish mindset. Like, they're making it difficult on me. Why don't you just pick something that works in my language? So do you see that? And how do you help organizations and leaders move past that mindset?
Yeah, so just to clarify, the mindset of...
The mindset that sort of people's differences are an inconvenience to me.
Right.
I mean, it seems like you say that out loud and go, well, hello. But I mean, I'm hearing it constantly from people, and I think it's a blind spot. They're kind of not really hearing what they're saying.
Yeah.
Right. So you play it back and they go, oh, wow, yeah, that's probably an issue.
In other words, I don't care how they want to show up in life.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So from an empathy standpoint, you know, I could relate that, you know, when we are working in an environment that is, you're essentially building a plane while you're flying it, where everything is running in over 100 miles per hour, people just don't have the energy to stop and reflect and say, okay, so I need to adjust my thinking accordingly, or pause and leverage some of my brain power to understand where this person's coming from. So there's that. From a diversity, equity, and inclusion standpoint, how do you create an environment where people can open their minds and reach out to the other person, seek to really understand what they're going through, what they're saying, or where they're coming from, before providing any or responding to that person? And so when I work with leaders, I often coach them through this concept of inclusive leadership, which is, you know, when you're a leader leading a division, it's of course not about you, it's about your teams and your people. And with that in mind, you also have to create an environment where people can feel free to contribute ideas, no matter their background, no matter their perspective, because they are an employee of your organization and they are a valued member of the organization. They are no longer, part of the contribution. There's this concept of stakeholder capitalism, which has translated, which has given employees voices into, and has allowed them to contribute their ideas to ensure that, you know, they have a voice at their table. And so with that in mind, you have to ensure that you're reaching out, connecting with people in a way that makes sense for them, and really getting them to be on the same point when you're trying to drive change for the organization. So that's my short, brief response to your question.
Well, it's obviously more complex. I mean, in some ways it's complex. In some ways, to me, it's simple. Like, to me, this is that blind spot. If a leader says what I just said they're saying, which is, why do people have to choose that?
Right. Yeah.
That to me is dismissive.
Right.
There's no empathy in that. And it's a very self-focused, it's hard for me, keep it easy. It's kind of like saying, why don't the foreigners speak better English? Right. you just go, did you just say that out loud? And
yeah, I mean, that's for sure. We'll get that person to HR for sure.
Well, right. But I think people say this and they don't realize what they're saying, and that there's now a core obstacle I guess this comes back to that self-awareness piece.
Right.
And so you're working with leaders and organizations, and let's stay with DEI right now. What are you finding are the biggest obstacles for them to make the changes they say they want to make?
Yeah, I think the biggest obstacle right now is, diversity, equity, inclusion divisions not having enough budget to do what they want to do. And that's because, they're not fully supported by top leadership within organizations. And the complexity and the amount of work that needs to be done in driving change within the organization and embedding DEI into all aspects of the organization, it's a lot of work. And a team of one is not going to solve that. Yeah. A team of three is not going to fix all of that. You need to have the appropriate number of employees to drive the kinds of change that's needed. And when it comes to getting people to change their behavior, their mindset, it's hard and it takes a lot of work and it requires patience. And so I think that's one of the top issues that I see. The second I would say is going back to my earlier point, not having enough manpower, not having enough people to drive the kinds of change that's needed. And again, it comes from the top down. If an employee or a manager or director can be very passionate, can invest in overtime to try to drive change, but if that person's boss or supervisor or an executive doesn't support the kinds of change that needs to happen, then it's going to require some coaching sessions for that that leader. And I just want to make another point to your previous question about why, when our leader responds to, let's say, a transgender employee saying, "Why does he or she need to be that way?" As you can see, based on the language selected, the choice, the choose, right? It seems like in his mind, it's a choice when really, it's really, a biological issue or aspect, I should say. And so, with these types of leaders, there has to be some coaching, coaching them through and educating them on issues of, transgender transitioning the workplace and so on, because that will definitely land that company in a lawsuit that they don't want to be in.
So there's two things that came up for me as you were talking. One is the, who is on the DE&I team that makes it effective? Do we exclude, I'm just saying, do we exclude white males and then everybody else is included in there? Do you want everybody in there? What does that team, what should that team look like? Because I realize we're, oftentimes part of the problem.
Yeah. So, for each organization is different. It just depends on the makeup of the organization and the need of the organization and the size of the organization. So I predominantly work with mid-sized companies. So like, 500 employees and up. And for those companies, having a diversity, equity, inclusion committee that advises their top leadership team is sufficient, but that's just speaking general terms because, of course, each company operates differently and the structure is different. And so you could create a DEI committee that advises the organization on DEI initiatives. You could hire a head of diversity, equity, inclusion to help think through, the landscape and how to embed DEI efforts within the organization. Another option, you could create employee resource groups, which are essentially affinity groups You know, these are composed of passionate current employees who love the organization and wants the organization to do good internally and externally. And so they volunteer their time, which I think is, you know, that's a separate topic, but they volunteer their time. So they put in extra work aside from what they're already doing or hired to do to help create a culture that will please employees company-wide. So those are just some of the options. In terms of who's included, who should or should not be included, you know, when it comes to, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion really is the concept of really getting everyone into the same table and ensuring that their voices are heard, right? Diversity is simply, you know, if you think about it, a meeting, right? Diversity is, you know, a meeting make up of people of different race and gender and religion and so on. Mm-hmm. Inclusion is where all of them get to speak. They're included into the meeting. They have an idea they want to contribute. They're more than welcome to do so. And then the concept of belonging is where I can say, you know, what I want to say, knowing that I'm being valued as an employee. And so for organizations to be successful, they have to have those components. And so when I work with organizations that are driving change as it relates to diversity, equity, inclusion, they have diverse, equity, inclusion committees, and within these committees, they have, of course, straight white men, you know, people of color, some that are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, people of different demographic. And so it's important that all voices are being represented in order to create the kind of change that you want to see.
Okay.
Go ahead, Craig.
The other part that I was going to say is you brought up something that I had never thought about before, which was oftentimes our response is in direct relation to the amount of time that we have to consider it. And I think that is so brilliant that if we're going with our hair on fire, we often don't take the time to consider the other person's perspective.
Right.
And how do you suggest, especially when you were, you know, in the San Francisco area or around startups or things like that, that the speed of business tends to increase, or it seems to be, but how do we get to that place where we still keep it human?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think, you know, going back to our point earlier is, you have to demonstrate self-awareness. You have to ensure that you are, you know, present in the moment, and you're operating in a moment that will get people to pay attention to what you're doing. While at the same time, you have to be adaptable to these situations. When I work for organizations that, you know, are moving at a very fast pace, and then there, you know, there are some issues that require a bit more of my attention and time. It, for me personally, I step back, reflect, and meditate. I think that really helps. That's a skill that I think that a lot of you know, business leaders need to have.
Yeah.
Because what it does is it really allows you to you know, tap into, you're essentially viewing yourself from the balcony at play, and then thinking strategically, you know, how you would play in the future, and how in the kinds of people you'll need to get involved in order to achieve a certain milestone or goal. And so it's really having that strategic mindset, as well as the ability to adapt. Having that self-awareness, the ability to really step back and reflect, I think those are some of the components that are necessary to get people to influence people, I'd say.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
If you enjoy the Leadership Junkies podcast and you want to grow your leadership, we have a new course for you called Become a Confident Leader. In this course, we will share some of the keys to becoming more confident in your leadership and also to become more impactful. Go to cardavera.com/confident to find out more. See you on the inside. Welcome back.
Let's talk about, I guess, I'd say it's a micro issue, but I think it has huge macro impact. I was recently listening to a book and I can't remember what it was. And it reminded me of the importance of having some shortcuts in difficult conversations. And what they were talking about is like, if you ask people's opinion with the speed of life kind of thing, if you ask them over here and in an objective question, would you support this or not? Would you think this is a good or a bad thing? Would you want to step in? Most people say, yeah, I'd step in. I wouldn't let that happen. But in the moment, they typically will, because they don't have a shortcut to get into it. And I'm wondering, how often have you seen some of these shortcuts used, especially around DEI? I think he's using around other things. I'll give you a quick example. This is outside of DEI. Let's say that someone is often not present and they say, I want to get better at it. Well, rather than me saying to Craig, if Craig's the one on his phone saying, Craig, hey, Craig, you're not here right now.
Huh? What do you mean?
Craig, you're distracted. Why are you on your phone? So I get this whole discussion. A shortcut might be, hey, Craig, are you present right now? Because we've agreed that that's language I can use.
Right.
It's very short. Mm-hmm. That's some of the keys. So have you looked at that at all, about what is some language shortcuts to help encourage people to speak up to create the change that they say they desire?
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, what I do is I often, when I'm engaging with people, right, that I work with, a simple check-in such as, how are you doing, allows me to tap into their current mindset.
Right.
And in get to know what is it that they're currently dealing with at the moment.
Yeah.
Everybody has something, like they're trying to put out a fire in the workplace. And so you have to be mindful in terms of when you're engaging with people and how you come across, how you communicate. Again, going back to that whole self-awareness piece, right? And when you ask that question, it's phenomenal. Like I get to dive into their inner world and say, oh wow, so that's what he or she's going through. That's great. I wonder if there's anything that I could do to help. I think that effective leaders are those that are public servants, people who are, have the ability and capacity to help other people and be of service to other people. And so so a quick check-in such as that really does a lot with, getting people to do the things you want them to do. The other is, just having small talks, at the office. This is, before COVID. When you just say a brief hello, which is a quick chat, you're building that relationship, that trust with that person, the rapport, right? And that's important to do in business, because when you need something from them or you want to influence in a certain way, they know you. And so so I think that those are just two of the elements that's on top of my mind as ways to influencing people, changing behaviors.
We haven't really talked a lot about COVID and some of the impacts of COVID. And one of the shifts that we know it has created is a much more expanded remote workforce. Mm-hmm. Whatever companies end up doing in the future, a lot of challenging decisions right now. The reality is more people will be working remotely post-COVID than before. Mm-hmm. And my question is, how are you seeing that impacting people development thus far? And what are you telling, what are you working with companies on to address that going forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, I know that there are companies that are eager to have their employees report back to, you know, to you know, on campus. And that's probably a really good way for them to, you know, increase more value is by having employees on site. But I think that the best organizations are those that allow for flexibility and the power for offering employees, you know, an option to choose whether they want to work from home or on site. Ultimately, the very best organizations are those that that tap into the purpose and know where they're going, and they offer flexibility to the employees. And as long as the employees are contributing to the mission of the organization and the direction which the organization is heading towards, then, you know, it's okay. It's fine. So, you know, again, every organization struggles with this challenge of, you know, of COVID. You know, there's also the safety concerns, right? Like, you know, how do you create an environment where people can feels like they're safe reporting to work without, you know, be concerned that they'll get infected. And so that's a major topic. And then, you know, the other is, you know, can we operate like a normal business if our employees were to work remotely? Yeah. Well, there's no such thing as a normal business.
That's a good point.
Constantly changing. The market is constantly changing. And so, the very best organizations know how to, they know what their purpose is, they know how to adapt accordingly to the change. And so that those are just some things that I see.
Yeah, good point.
So you've talked a little bit about, several times you've mentioned psychological safety. Mm-hmm. And I think in many ways, that's a new concept, mm-hmm. at least that language. And if you look at generationally, I mean, I suspect my father is 84 and ran his own business. And if I said, "Dad, did you look out for the psychological safety of people?" he'd go, "What? They were in the insane asylum?" You know, maybe yeah. not quite, but what are you talking about? And we had a guest just the other day, Ian Adair, who was talking about mental health in the workplace.
Yeah.
What are you seeing in the space in these mid-sized companies? Are leaders and organizations open to this concept of psychological safety? If they're not, what kind of resistance are you seeing? And where they are open, what are some of the specific things they're doing to create it?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, when I work with leaders, I mean, it's a spectrum, right? I'm working with leaders that are that don't know what a psychological safety is and are trying to be educated on it, and those that are in the middle, and then those that are on the other end, which is, you know, I'm all for psychological safety. Let's create this environment. Let's, you know, I'll model, I'll demonstrate it to employees and get people to, you know, to be on the same, you know, playing field that I'm in. Yeah. And so, well, you know, I think, you know, part of has to do with being comfortable with vulnerability. And
totally.
I'm sure your listeners are familiar with Brené Brown's The Power of Vulnerability, which I highly recommend to anyone who is trying to create a more inclusive, creative culture. You know, and people can, you know, make mistakes and learn from it and not being, you know, penalized for that, is that, you know, when you create an environment where people are safe, right? Like they're it's okay to make mistakes. We all do that, and it's part of the innovation. It's part of driving the business forward. It really allows, you know, I think magic to happen. Mm. It's where the excitement is at. And for leaders that are resistant to this concept of psychological safety, you know, maybe perhaps, you know, they were at one point in their life been traumatized by a certain life event or relationship. And so you have to, you know, dig a little deeper, you know, offer some coaching sessions, ensuring that, you know, this leader understands what that concept is and how it shows up within his division or organization, but also working through maybe perhaps those personal struggles that he or she may have. Because we bring a lot of our baggage to work, right? And that impacts our, you know, how we develop relationships at work, and in our work in general. And so we have to ensure that we're working through those internal struggles in order to build the most effective organization for our employees.
Sounds like we need to have some bravery.
Yeah,
we need to encourage people to have courage.
Exactly. I mean, vulnerability is really about having the courage to be seen 100%. And, you know, I've worked with some leaders that don't see it as that. They see it the complete opposite. It's a sign of weakness.
They don't need to see who I am.
With courage. What's that?
Yeah. They don't need to see who I am.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, leadership has changed. And, you know, at maybe 20, 30 years ago, you know, being vulnerable might get you fired. But now, I mean, leadership has changed and people need that. People need to see that humanness, that people first mentality. And so leaders, especially for leaders, they have to have that element of vulnerability. It's what their employees are looking for. It's what the market demands in order to drive growth for the business. And if leaders don't have that, they're going to struggle on the journey of being an effective leader.
Do they have to like themselves first?
Yeah, part of that, yes, that's very important.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, again, you have to do the internal work, build that self-confidence and really tap into, you know, that space of joy and peace and love for yourself. And these things aren't talked about enough in the leadership space. Leadership is an inside out thing. It's a concept where it's, you know, what you feel in the inside is what you do on the outside. And I've worked with some of the best leaders in the world. And those that I see are they have, you know, high self-awareness. They treat people with empathy and care, and they are a servant to their employees. And those are the leaders that inspire organizations to be better.
John, you may have touched on this, and as we get near the end here, maybe this will be our final wrap-up question. You talked about how generations have changed. And it's easy to say generations, oh, we're going to talk about millennials and none. That's not what it's about. To me, it's about the reality that most leaders today at more senior levels, just because of except for maybe startups, and if they started them younger, they never saw the kind of leadership you're talking about model. Mm-hmm. They never had a conversation about psychological safety. It's a completely foreign language.
Right.
So I'm curious, I'm guessing you run into that regularly, that this is all new to them. Mm-hmm. What have you found to be the key message in the hope of having them be open to the importance of that?
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying that's the reality today. Do it or you're going to lose all your people. But you know what? They're not going to lose all their people. They won't. They won't lose all their people. The question is, will they lose enough that it causes enough pain? So there's an obstacle of lack of experience with it. What have you found to be the key to dig into that obstacle?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, that's another great question. I think it's creating a sense of inspiration. I think a lot of people, if they want to be happy in their job, if they want to create a culture where they build healthy relationships. They have to understand that this concept is at the core of all of those elements. When you build an environment where people can really truly be who they are, what you're essentially doing is you're inviting authenticity into the room. You're inviting a high trust component into the room. You're also inviting a chance for people to really connect to each other. And these are, part of, what's going to require soft skills to create, but they're also very important for the organization and for your health. And the job makes up 70% of our time? I don't know, 60% or 40, I don't know what the percentage.
A whole bunch.
We spend a lot of time at work. Why not build an environment where people can, help you as a leader drive the kind of change to reach the kinds of goals you want, to maximize profit, even increase your salary or build the kind of relationship you want. These are all positive aspects. And so, what I do when I work with these, first-time leaders is really coaching them through, the process of, what does success mean to you? How does it show up? By asking these questions and the right questions and really get to know their mindset, you can really then apply the necessary solution to hopefully, influence them and change them, their behaviors in a certain way that will, be successful for them and their teams.
Outstanding. Well, thank you, Kong. Thank you for all that you've shared and that you brought to us and our listeners today. We always want to give our guests a chance to highlight anything in particular you want to promote today for you personally or professionally.
Yeah. Again, thank you, Jeff and Craig. Both of you have been amazing throughout this, this podcast episode. I appreciate your time. People can find me. I'm a podcaster as well, so people can find me on the Purpose Tune podcast. If you Google it, you'll find it. I'm on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify. You can also find me on LinkedIn. My first name is Kong, K-H-O-N-G. Last name is Xiong, X-I-O-N-G. I'm also on Instagram. It's my first name underscore last name. And I'm also on Facebook. So I hope that your listeners will find this episode helpful and that they'll be able to connect with me.
Wonderful, Kong. We always wrap up with one of our questions. And the question I want to ask you today is about role models. Mm. Who is a key leadership role model for you, and what made them so key for you?
I would say I haven't met him personally. I've seen his videos on TED Talk and YouTube, but Simon Sinek, he talks about purpose and the why. Why do we do what we do? How do we influence or inspire organizations to lead more effectively? And so I think that he speaks a lot to my generation, to the current challenges that we're going through. If you think about it, the baby boomers will retire, and our generation, my generation, will be the next leader. And so we have to ensure that we're equipped with the right mindset, toolset, skill set to really lead effectively. And so he's the one guy that I like.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Kong, and thanks for the work you're doing in the world and bringing this powerful message to the people that you serve and that in turn those that they serve.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The world's best known investor and Wall Street expert, Warren Buffett, once said, "Wall Street is the only place that people ride to in a Rolls Royce to get advice from those who take the subway." Mr. Buffett's quote is remarkably accurate, but how many people would rather receive advice from him than someone simply guessing? Welcome to Buy, Hold, Sell, your single source for Wall Street knowledge and profitable guidance. Please join me, Todd Schoenberger, and fellow trader Tobin Smith, as well as host Veronica Dudo, for a podcast known to move the needle for investors. Tobin and I are seasoned Wall Street executives with deep investment experience, and we are prepared to share our advice to those who choose to listen. Download Buy, Hold, Sell today on the Evergreen Podcast Network or your favorite podcast channel.